Hey everybody, welcome into the Cubs Weekly Podcast presented by Wintrust, proud legacy partner of the Chicago Cubs. I'm Tony Andracki, and joined by Andy Martinez here in our podcast room in the Marquee Sports Network studios. Andy, it's been a really chilly, frigid start to the homestand here, but you've been surviving the cold so far?
Yeah, so far. I'm just glad we've been able to get these games in so far. That's been the best part, is to be able to have the home opener and get a second game in, and just want to see baseball being played. With that weather, that was definitely a question mark.
Yeah, I mean, you and Council both, I think that was a big factor. And one of the things, obviously, is that the Rockies only come to town once, and it's not a divisional opponent like the Reds or the Pirates, who come back at least one more time. And, like, yeah, they're playing with the off day on Thursday, and there were other aspects of it that they could try to move around. But, like, this is it. And this is why, like, I feel like the schedule should be better than this. You know, right. Like, early April games at Wrigley are always a crapshoot either way. But, like, if you're going to do it, at least play the divisional opponents who come back again. Because I would say it's almost a 50-50 chance of weather being a factor, and maybe even, you know, pretty close to, like, 50% chance that weather's a factor enough each year to, like, rain out a game, snow out a game, cold out a game, whatever it may be, like, every early April in Chicago.
Yeah, having, like, playing, if they were playing the Reds or the Pirates, it's like if you had to move a game, you can play a doubleheader when they come back the next time. You can. There's ways to work around it. And for the Cubs, especially with their pitching questions, especially surrounding Justin Steele, like, yeah, having a chance to be able to get these games in was crucial to not test their depth already more so than it already has been this season.
Yeah, and I think, so you just brought up Justin Steele. I mean, that's the huge point for sure, is it, like, that's the top storyline of the first week of the season, is opening day, Justin Steele injures his hamstring. He had been pitching pretty well. Like, I would say he was cruising in that opening day start against the Rangers. You know, powerful lineup. Cubs go on to lose that game. They lost the next night. They were able to salvage the finale in Texas. But that being said, like, you already know Justin Steele is not going to be a part of this rotation for April. That's the one, I would say that's probably the most important guy on the roster. Like, that, like, if you asked me right before opening day, who's the one guy that you would say you don't think the Cubs can, it would be the worst thing for the Cubs if he missed a month, I would say Justin Steele. And yeah. I mean, that's the reality here. And so for the Cubs to string together a few wins in a row after that injury, certainly helpful. But that being said, I mean, we're not going to see Justin Steele until May. And, you know, I think the hope is, the Cubs are crossing their fingers, it might be an early to mid-May type of situation.
Right. And we've seen him walking around and you know, he looks like he's
his gait looks normal.
Right. Yeah. But it's definitely different once you get into the pitching universe, right? When you're actually using your muscles a lot more and just doing different than just walking, right?
And so something you and I don't know anything about.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. Yes. So, like, being able to actually get him really 100% healthy and then getting him back on a throwing program, I think a lot of this is just going to be building back up. It's not so much that the injury is, like, super severe, and Council mentioned when it happened, like, they feel like this was pretty good news in terms of how it looked originally. So for him to be able to just, it was a grade one strain in his left hamstring, for it to just be that, I think it was good news for the Cubs. And it allows them to kind of, you know, get him back theoretically in May, like you mentioned. By that time, you hope Jameson Taillon's back. And you really run into a really good question, or a really good problem to have if you're the Chicago Cubs, because Shota Umanaga, one start in, looks really, really good. Mm-hmm. Javier Assad, the fifth starter in his season debut, looked really, really good. If Kyle Hendricks can turn it around, you're looking at 6-7 guys that are, like, really options to start. You're only going to be using 5 of them. Like, it becomes a roster question. Like, well, what do you do? What happens when these guys come back? It's a really theoretically good problem to have come May if everything goes according to plan with those guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think, one, you hit the nail on the head of, like, they want to do it right with Justin Steele. They want to build him back up. And there's maybe the other side of the coin aspect of this all, is that, like, there's good and bad to this happening so early in the season. The good is that, like, maybe you want to get to a point where you eradicate this issue and the rest of the season, the final 5 months, he's fine and it's not something that lingers. That's a huge factor here. They want to make sure that he is fully recovered. The other aspect is, you know, this was his first start and he's, like, still kind of in the build-up process. Like, on opening day, and I think Taylor McGregor had a great stat, you know, nugget in during the series in Texas, that's like, guys don't throw 100 pitches on opening day, or really the first time through the rotation. So, like, he was just still building up, and then he got hurt. So, like, I mean, I don't think anybody is saying he was built up to, like, exactly where he would be in mid-season form, because they're so protective of arms nowadays, and especially a guy like Steele, who has Tommy John and other arm injuries in his past. So, you know, I do think that there is some good and some bad with it. What you said, though, is I think where where it would be a good problem if it comes to May, but I think there's a little bit of like holding your breath now if you're Jed Hoyer, if you're Carter Hawkins, if you're Craig Counsell, because you felt good about your pitching depth, but then Jameson Taillon was hurt in spring, and then he's not starting the year. You're like, okay, I think we're all right. Then your best pitcher, your ace, gets hurt, and then you're like, okay, I feel like we're like one other injury away from this being a potential disaster. I don't think it's a disaster now. They may be able to get around it. And one thing that I really have pointed to, and Jed pointed to as well, is Craig Counsell is a great part of it. He's a big factor in this because he's been through this. And as soon as Steele got hurt, it wasn't just like lamenting or bemoaning. I think those were the two words that Jed used. It was about, okay, what's next? Who are we going to call up? We know it was Ben Brown, and we know it's the youngster, the rookie who, has come out. He had a rough first outing in Texas, but like, it's a lot of swing and miss stuff. If he can work within the strike zone, it's an interesting guy. I think the Ben Brown aspect of like, this is a great chance to get a look at him. Games don't feel as intense in April, and we knew we were going to see him at some point this year anyway.
Right. And, we talked about it. We've talked about it really the first three games of this series or of the season, the next two games, like, the Craig Counsell effect is already being seen, and this is a prime example of it. I thought the way he used Ben Brown was incredibly smart. His first outing was incredibly smart. Like, that was his day he was going to pitch in Iowa regardless. So, like, I understood why you wanted to get him in there. He was probably ready to pitch. He wanted to get him in the game. But what was impressive to me was it was a close game. It would have, if Counsell had decided to go with Hector Neris or some of his other leverage guys, Merriweather, Leiter, Alzolay, to keep that game close to try and win that second game of the season, I don't think anyone would have blamed him.
Yeah,
it would have kept the game close, it would have given the Cubs offense a chance to come back. But getting Ben Brown in that situation, first of all, it protects those guys. It's not a winning situation, so if you use them, they could be down the next day or the day after or the day. Like, it has a ripple effect on the ensuing days. Going to Ben Brown there, it gets his feet wet in the major leagues. So now the next time he has to go into a game, is probably going to be Wednesday, if this game gets played. We're recording Wednesday before the finale against Colorado. If he goes in for length, it's not a oh my gosh, shining bright lights moment for him in the major leagues. I remember Jordan Wicks talked about it on the Cubs Weekly podcast. He was so glad that he made his debut not in Wrigley, because his first time at Wrigley when he wasn't pitching, he was like, it was so much. And like, to try and like soak that all in, it was just way too much. So to be able to have those opportunities, especially like an opening day, it allows Ben Brown to really settle in, so that the next time he goes out there, you feel confident that he can, do his thing and execute his pitches. Something that he said he felt like he did pretty well. Just some of them weren't the greatest, and against the Rangers lineup, but like, they took advantage. The Counsell effect in that aspect, I think, is really, really real, really, really important, and just a great way to break Ben Brown into the major leagues.
Yeah, and I think the interesting aspect about Brown too is like, so there's certain limits and regulations for the optioning guys or calling guys back up after you option them. So it's, 15 days for pitchers for I think it's 15 days,
15
right?
15 days, yeah. 10 days for position players.
Yeah, so from the start of the season or when you option them. So, I mean, that gets into like the April 10th and 11th range before you can call up guys like Keegan Thompson or whatever else, unless there's an injury. If there's an injury, then you can call up anybody right. that you had optioned down. So they had their choice of anybody with Steele, and they chose Ben Brown. I think that means something too, is, they believe in the guy. They believe in him to be able to be a multi-inning reliever if need be, or to be a starter. Just give them bulk in some capacity. And, I liked what Jed said, is that like, Ben Brown's part of the solution while Justin Steele's out. And we're going to see that for the next couple of weeks. And, maybe for better, for worse, and in other moments, but like, they're going to get an opportunity. And this is a guy who has the potential to be one of the top starters in the, either way, just one of the top pitchers, I think, to by June, by July, definitely by like a pennant race. This is a guy who can be a very, very big X factor for the team that they weren't necessarily counting on to start the year, because they had this full bullpen and this full rotation, injury strike. This is just what happens every year. Now Ben Brown is getting this opportunity, and maybe he hits his stride, and maybe he's a huge factor for the team down the stretch.
It's important to remember too, last year, where when Ben Brown was pitching well in Iowa, when it looked like when it came into September, when they needed to start with Marcus Stroman's injury, it looked like Ben Brown made the most sense. Then he got hurt. It ended up being Jordan Wicks who gets called up. We see what happens. Like, Ben Brown was more than ready a year ago. Well, I guess it would have been like 7 or 8 months ago technically, but whatever. Like, at the end of last season, he was ready. So calling him up this early, while it's a major league debut, it might seem a little shocking, it's not entirely like he was earned, and they believe in him. They know he can pitch at this level. It's important. And as you mentioned, they're going to be for about another week or so. This is their pitching staff, barring an injury. Like, these are who they're going to rely on. They needed a long relief option, and Daniel Palencia, Keegan Thompson might have made sense, but they're probably not giving you as much length as Ben Brown and as much quality as Ben Brown. So having that option and having that ability to rely on him is crucial. And I think it creates another ripple effect once Jameson Taillon comes back, because he's probably the next guy to be healthy before Steele. Well, what do you do? Like, if Ben Brown pitches well, it creates a little conundrum that the Cubs are in. But if he's not pitching well, you can continue to stretch him out in Iowa and continue to have him length as an option if and when another injury occurs.
And go down armed with more information about this exactly. is what I need to do to get big league hitters out, that kind of stuff. And, you know, so Taillon threw a live BP a couple innings on Tuesday in Arizona. So, you know, we'll see how he comes out of that, like, in the coming days and what the exact plan is moving forward. But, you know, as he recovers from this back injury that limited him in spring training, landed him on the IL to start the year. So you're right. Like, he is a guy that, like, maybe by the end of the month or middle of the month or something, we may see join the rotation. But, you know, I think you, going back to a point you had hit on earlier that I agree with 100%, is, like, we're seeing the council effect with this pitching staff already. We're seeing his impact immediately, and yes, in part because of some injuries, but just the way that he manages the bullpen. I mean, this is like a bullpen savant. They've always talked about him. And I think that's part of the reason why. And I've noticed when he was the manager of the Brewers before that, like, he would never use Devin Williams or Josh Hader, some of his top leverage arms, if the game was out of hand or the likelihood was, like, really, really small that his team would come back. And that's exactly what he did on Saturday, even though it was a close game until, you know, Ben Brown ended up getting charged with 6 runs in the 8th inning, whatever that was. He didn't use some of the guys, Neris and whoever. That led to Sunday, a victory where Jordan Wicks, because of some errors, had to throw more pitches, only lasted 4 innings. Bam, Mark Leiter Jr. is out there in the 5th. Julian Merriweather's covering 2 innings. Hector Neris is covering another, you know, the 8th. Edward Alzolay is out there. It ended up not being a safe situation, but, like, still, you use those guys in that spot to, like, make sure you come away with a win against the defending champs in the opening series of the season. And then it sets yourself up where, like, those guys were rested. They could have pitched Monday if need be. They could pitch Tuesday. You know, they ended up not. It's just the way those games played out. But, like, that's, I feel like, and you said ripple effect, that's the ripple effect. That's the trickle-down effect of a guy like Council, who's really, really good at managing a pitching staff. And I'm just impressed that, like, what we thought was going to play out, we're already seeing in the first week of the season.
Right, and it's the ripple effect that it has is if you go back to what happens the next this coming weekend, right? They have an off day Thursday. If they do get used on Wednesday, they have Thursday as an off day for the Dodgers series, which is probably going to be a really intense and close series. You have most of your leverage arms pretty well rested. You have options that you can go to against a very potent lineup that if you feel like it's a close game or you have to do something maybe a little out of the ordinary because it's the Dodgers, because they're really deep 1-9 and you might have to bring in a reliever in the 6th inning for a starter, like, you feel more comfortable doing that knowing that they're well rested from the previous 4 or 5 days.
Yeah, I think we've also seen it in the Rockies series of, you know, it ended up being a 5-0 game on Monday. Drew Smyly was out there for the 8th and then stays out there for the 9th and just throws 2 innings. And it's like, yeah, they know that they were going to probably need Smyly in some capacity on Wednesday and you know, later on as they fill this hole in the rotation with Steele out. But it's like, okay, well, let's go get this win now and let's not burn anybody else. Right. You know, let's not burn an unnecessary bridge arm in the bullpen. I mean, if we don't need to. So, you know, don't bring in Jose Kwas, save him. Then he's able to throw a couple innings on Tuesday. It's this constant trickle-down effect to where then by the time the stretch run comes, the Cubs maybe are ideally in a situation where the bullpen is rested and fresh and feeling good for a postseason stretch run. And that's exactly why, like, Craig Tober became a thing, or he was so big in September as well. So we're going to take a quick break here on the Cubs Weekly Podcast. When we come back, we're going to talk about Christopher Morel at third base and other takeaways from the first week of the season.
You've got the jersey, the ball cap, the foam finger. Everyone can see you're a Chicago Cubs fan from a mile away. Ready to take your look to the next level? Upgrade your wallet with an exclusive Cubs debit card, which you can get when you open a Wintrust Cubs checking account. With no monthly fees, free ATMs nationwide, and a $300 bonus when you open your account. Start showing your Cubs pride with every purchase. Sign up at Wintrust.com/Cubs. Only $100 required to open. No monthly minimum balance and no monthly maintenance fees. Member FDIC and equal housing lender.
All right, we're back here on the Cubs Weekly Podcast. Tony Andracki, Andy Martinez, and Andy, we keep talking. First week into the season, What have you thought so far of the Christopher Morel experiment? Maybe experiment's the wrong word, but the experience, the Christopher Morel experience at third base so far.
It's been kind of what we expected. There's been some solid plays, and there's been some errors there. And I think that was kind of to be expected. Craig Counsell mentioned in spring training, this was never going to be a, on opening day, he's a great third baseman, and he's figured it out. Like, it's going to be an ongoing thing. It might not even be May 1st. It might not even be June 1st. It might not even be July 1st when he kind of figures it out.
How about August 1st?
It could be, maybe. Yeah, it could be. But, like, it's going to be a work in progress. Like, there's going to be some plays where you're like, man, like, what went wrong there? Or there's going to be some plays where you're like, oh, he's figuring it out. Like, it's not, what is Jed Hoyer and Theo Epstein before
always linear. Said,
it's never linear, right? Yeah. Like, there's going to be growing pains. And the Cubs are okay taking those growing pains because we saw what his bat can do. Like, it's as advertised. It's, you're picking up right where he left off, 198 WRC plus. Like, he is really, really solid. And he just has that, like, that it factor, that magic factor, that, in that Little League home run against the Rockies was like, who else could it have happened to?
I just see Morel. Javi and Morel. Like, yeah, I see a lot of similarities in that facet. Yeah.
Right. Like, it's like, who would have thought that he could hit a single to Nolan Jones, who's got one of the best arms in baseball, and it would go under his glove, and it leads to three runs and just a wild electric home opening moment. Like, it was just one of those moments that you kind of, you don't know what's going to happen when you go to the baseball park every day. Mm-hmm. That was that moment for me.
Yeah, and I think, like, he deserves a lot of credit for hustle, too. And Counsell said after the game is, like, he was hustling out of the box. If not for that, maybe he doesn't even get to third, or he probably should get to third either way. Right. But because of that, then he gets an extra run. So they would have had two, but because he was hustling and ready to run and being aggressive, he was already at third, rounded third, and when they bobbled the relay,
he
took off and he was good.
Yep.
Yeah. And so, he picked up the ball too, picked up it, talked to his coach, like all of that. He did everything right on that play, and he hit the ball so hard that, like, once it went under Nolan Jones's glove, it rolled all the way to the wall. So it wasn't like a ball that just went 10 feet behind him and the Cubs get one run and end up with second and third.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I think there was a lot impressive for sure, and he's been an incredible offensive force for this team early on, and I like the way the lineup is set up. You know, he's hitting cleanup behind Bellinger, and you know, the lefty righty matchups and stuff so far with Seiya in the second spot. But I think that, like, we're seeing the type of impact he can make offensively, but we're also seeing the drawbacks defensively, and I do like how Counsell has played it so far, where Morel has DH'd a couple of times and Madrigal has been out there at third. And we saw Tuesday night, Madrigal made an incredible play to save a run with Javier Assad on the mound to finish the sixth inning. And also then, Counsell's been aggressive. Like, we were talking about Sunday winning that game. Morel makes the last out in, what was that, the ninth inning, right?
The eighth inning.
You know, and then Madrigal comes in as a defensive replacement. And so then you know that you're getting to the point where, like, okay, in the ninth inning, you're either taking the lead, Madrigal's up ninth, you're either taking the lead and Madrigal's up and you don't worry so much about Morel's bat, or you go to extras and then Madrigal's contact-oriented approach is even more of an asset than it is during, like, regulation play. So I thought it was a really aggressive, bold move to make in the third game of the season, but I think it sent a pretty clear message that, like, Madrigal is a big part of this team because of his stellar defense at third base, and because while the Cubs are going to give Morel an opportunity, a runway at third base to learn, it's not going to be forever. And, like, he needs to start making plays, and Counsell's not made any excuses. Like, the line drive on Monday, it's like he just missed it. That's it, plain and simple. Morel's missed a couple line drives. He's made a couple errors so far. But, like, we're seeing the fact that the Cubs are trying to win games and give him runway at third base. And I do think that that's really important. And I think, as we said, too, like, it sets the Cubs lineup. Like, you got Ian Happ and Nico Horner switching off in the leadoff spot. Then Seiya, Bellinger, and Morel. It's just nice to see, like, 2, 3, 4 be the same in every game for the Cubs so far.
Yeah, and we talked much about the Craig Counsell effect, right, where we saw it on the pitching side. On the offensive side, you mentioned the defensive replacement, but I also liked how he's used Morel as a third baseman and when he's used Madrigal. Used Madrigal on opening day with Justin Steele, a lefty who's probably going to induce a lot of ground balls, so you put in Nick Madrigal there. With Javier Assad, a guy who induces a lot of ground balls, Madrigal makes more sense there. Like, it's still giving him opportunities at third base, but realizing, like, if we're going to need more defense on a certain day, it's going to be Madrigal over Morel. I think that's been really important to see, and it's kind of the best of both worlds. It still gives you really good defense, but when you think you're going to have maybe fewer ground balls than another day, it allows you to give him the opportunity at third base and continue to have that runway to kind of grow into the position.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we talked about his offensive ability here. I mean, Bellinger looks like this lineup has been solid so far. Yeah. You know, Bellinger is somewhat picking up where he left off last year. Seiya Suzuki is absolutely picking up where he left off last year. And Ian Happ, who's, you know, tried out in the leadoff spot in the past, you know, he started the 2018 season off with a home run on the first pitch. He's back in the leadoff spot, and he's kind of doing what he did last year as well, you know, drawing walks, seeing a lot of pitches, getting a few hits so far. Like, I do think that this is the Cubs lineup that I like the best, and then Nico leading off against lefties too. He's going to be a big part of the runs that, you know, the run production that this lineup puts together. So I like the way that the lineup has been put together so far, and it feels deep because then, you know, after Morel, you got Dansby Swanson, you got Michael Busch, you got, you know, Yan Gomes back there, Mike Talkman, Garrett Cooper had a big, you know, debut at Wrigley Field on Tuesday night. So it feels like there's some length absolutely there, and I just like the way that the offense has played out in a historically difficult time to yeah. score runs, and even this week at Wrigley has been a difficult time, and like they're about to go on the West Coast, so hopefully, you know, the next homestand won't be anything like this in terms of weather, but like it now is like a good opportunity. And you know, as we're continuing to just talk even about like the way the team has looked so far, you brought up earlier like the rotation, so Shota Imanaga, Javier Assad, you know, I think those guys have both back-to-back six quality starts, but like the six shutout innings like have looked fantastic. Then Jordan Wicks, I think, looked a little bit better than his line showed.
Yeah, Jordan Wicks' line was so deceiving because if you looked at it, you're like, wow, he didn't go long, allowed a lot of runs, but there was the Morel error, there was Dansby error, like those things add up that instead of making, you know, 15 pitches to get out of an inning, now you're making 25 pitches. And if you do that twice, which is what happened, now you're looking at an extra 20 pitches. That takes away an inning of work that you could have done. Probably took away probably two innings of work that he could have contributed to. So all those things start to add up, and it leads to the ripple effect of the bullpen. So when Shota Imanaga goes out there on the home opener and goes six innings, nine strikeouts, that saves your bullpen. And it's a blowout game. It really saves your bullpen. Then the next day for Javier Assad to go six innings himself in a blowout as well. Like, all those things are so huge, and it's a reminder of just how deep the pitching staff really is. I think Javier Assad, I mean, I kind of fell into it too. Like, I think we all just assumed like he's a swing man. Like, yeah, he's their long relief option. He'll make spot starts. Like, he's in spring training, at least it was, he's the swing man. He's like, he's in the fifth starter battle, but he's not really in the fifth starter battle. Once he started, you're like, yeah, that's who he is. Like, he is a very, very dependable pitcher. He can do everything. He can be the swing man, but he's a really, really solid starter. And if you look back at his numbers in 2023, he was one of their best starters down the stretch in August and September. So to be able to have that in your rotation, I think is a feather in the Cubs' cap, and it allows them to be super creative in what they do, even amongst injuries to their top two starters.
And I think the most impressive thing about Assad is, like, he has flown under the radar his entire career. I mean, going back to, really, he was never a top prospect coming up.
No.
2022, he comes up, and it's like, what do you expect from this guy? And it's like, each time out, he's impressive, and he gets out and he limits runs. And I mean, it reminds me a little bit of Kyle Hendricks in the sense, like, different pitchers for sure.
Right.
But like in the sense of, like, people count him out, people like may look at him and be like, okay, this isn't a dominant pitcher, but then he just goes out and produces. And like, Assad is off to a very similar start that Hendricks was to his career. First 153 innings of Assad's big league career, he's at what, 2.97 ERA, 2.94 ERA?
Yeah, 2.94, yeah.
And then, you know, 1.27 WHIP. Like, you know, the WHIP maybe a little high, but like the ERA is in the elite territory. Right. So like at the end of the day, like, he just limits runs. He limits damage from the other team. And he goes out there and his first start, as we say, guys are building up, six shutout innings. Like, I mean, like, what else do you want from a guy who was your sixth or seventh or eighth starter that you thought going into the year? So I do think that that's been impressive. And I mean, Shota Imanaga was like, that's about as impressive as it gets for your MLB debut, your Cubs debut, all of these things, like pitching out there in freezing cold temperatures and short sleeves. Like, I thought that was really impressive too. You know, there was not a ball on the ground. He had like nine flyouts and nine strikeouts in six innings. It was just like impressive all around. And to your earlier point, I think the Cubs feel like, and I feel like agree, that they're in a pretty good spot and maybe can buy time until their veterans, their studs, their Tyone and Steele can get back in this rotation.
The most impressive thing for me with Shota Imanaga was we saw the fastball in spring and we saw the slider. He never really broke out the splitter, and the splitter was this pitch that everyone talked about. Like, his splitter's really good. You never saw it really in spring training. He didn't throw it much, and Yan Gomes even said he wasn't throwing his splitter a lot in spring training. And then it comes to game action, and he broke out that splitter, and that pitch was deadly. Like,
pretty good.
It was a really, really good pitch. The Nolan Jones strikeout, I believe, the 13 pitch at bat was on the splitter. Like, it was just a fantastic pitch to use. And I remember, you know, not to toot my own horn, but I said he was the Cubs Cy Young in the preseason.
Yes, you did, a week ago, yes.
Right, and like, I thought it was going to be because of the fastball. Like, I thought the fastball was going to be a weapon. I still think it's going to be really big. But that splitter is a game changer. Like, that is the pitch that really, really could make a difference for him. And I, like, he still have fly ball tendencies. I still believe, like, there's going to be some outings where it could get ugly. But man, what a first impression to make in your major league debut.
Yeah. So Shota Imanaga was your Cy Young pick. Who was mine? Do you remember?
Justin Steele.
Yeah. So
not a great start.
No, I mean, it's tough. You know, it wasn't a bold prediction.
It's 162.
Of course.
It's 162 right, like, game season.
We'll see how things play out. It's one start right. for each of them. Steele's obviously going to miss a month plus of the season. So we'll see. It might still be right. But right now, a week in, you're absolutely
we can end the count now.
Yeah, in my opinion. All right, we'll end it right now, Andy, for you. All right, but before we wrap up here on the Cubs Weekly Podcast, let's talk a little bit about not only Imanaga but Seiya Suzuki, and then the Cubs welcoming the Dodgers into town. So I mean, you have those two guys, and then you have Shohei Ohtani, and you have Yamamoto as well. So I mean, you have four of these like Japanese icons that are going to be playing at Wrigley Field against each other. Imanaga, as it stands right now, would be slated to start on Sunday. So like, he would be facing, you know, Ohtani at least. Yamamoto may or may not be pitching like Friday or Saturday. I don't know exactly if the Dodgers are going to change the rotation. I think if everything went perfectly, Friday would be when he was targeted for. So then he might be facing Seiya. So it's like, there's just a lot of really cool aspects, and it's like this worldwide series, I feel like, this weekend here at Wrigley.
Right. These are, all four of these guys are stars in Japan. And like, we know Shohei Ohtani.
They're stars here.
Right. And we know Shohei Ohtani's, you know, transcends baseball. Like, he's a big figure. But Yamamoto was the best pitcher in Japan. Imanaga was a really good pitcher in Japan. He started the WBC final for Team Japan, pitched really, really well in that. Seiya Suzuki was supposed to be a very, very important piece of the Team Japan that
then
before
Ohtani
got hurt.
Closed that game out.
Right. Yeah. So like, these are, you think about it, if roles were reversed, like, it's probably like if like Mike Trout and like Garrett Cole, like all these guys went and played in Japan and faced off in Japan, that's what it would be like on a comparable level. It's going to be super, super cool to see that. I think it's going to be so much fun for them to face their compatriots in a major league game. Like, it's going to be a really, really fun series.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's going to be a fun series. We hope the weather holds off, you know, a little bit better too. But like, anytime you see Cubs Dodgers at Wrigley, by the way, it always feels like it's early April or mid-April for it.
Always.
Like, I don't know why that keeps happening. Like I said, we talk about the schedule. Like, Dodgers only come to Wrigley once, and it's like April, like pretty much every year the last like 4 or 5 years. So. Whatever, but like, I think that it's going to be a really awesome series, a very, very entertaining, like, made-for-TV type series. So tune in all weekend long on Marquee Sports Network for the Cubs-Dodgers series. That'll do it for us here on the Cubs Weekly Podcast. For Andy, I'm Tony. As always, we're sponsored by Winterfest.